Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's Saturday.
It is Saturday, and you say this every Saturday, but it is a great day because people get to sleep in a little bit. Yeah, if you do have to go to work, sometimes it's a little bit of a more relaxed type of day. The weather's going to be great. Really can't complain about anything.
That's right. And, you know, I don't like to hear people complain anyway.
Well, that's
it ruins my day.
It does.
And, you know, when I get up and I'm at the office or whatever I'm doing, doesn't matter. If it's Saturday, Friday, I'm in a good mood. I don't want anybody to spoil my day.
Right, yeah.
You know, I'm going to put my hands over my ears if they say anything that I don't want to hear.
Blah, 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 blah. I can't hear you. Can't hear you.
That's me. I want to hear great things.
Yes.
You know, I want to hear great music. I want to hear great words out of people's mouths.
Yeah. Well, the day is going to be wonderful. It's going to be fantastic. The sun's going to be out. It's going to be warm. We're almost into the summer months. So
everybody needs to go jog first thing at 6.
Well, that might be a little aggressive.
I got it.
Jogging, maybe too much. Maybe a nice little stroll would be nice.
Oh,
meandering.
A stroll, no jogging. Okay.
No. Meander on a Saturday morning. Everybody likes that.
Did you know that studies show a little walk or a jog first thing in the morning, about 10 minutes of it, will help your brain for the day. It helps you retain the things you've been told for the day. How about that?
I can believe that.
It does. It helps you retain things. And they say for school children, if they will run every morning before they go to school, when they get to school, they will retain what they learned.
I believe that.
How about that?
And kids have the energy to run that time of day. So maybe they should all run to school, and then they would retain everything better.
Love that idea. Hey, the three-year-old, if he doesn't run in the morning, he is not happy. Mm. He likes to do at least 6 laps, and sometimes he'll do 15. Little boy is a runner.
Wow.
He's 3 years old. And he wants to run every day of his life.
Wow.
And if the weather's bad, he is not happy. He wants to go outside early. Before 7 o'clock, he likes to run with his brother and sister, or he'll run by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care.
You know, I used to want to try to run. For some reason, I'm just not good at it. And I think I'm much better at, like, either walking or riding a bicycle.
Well, now, riding a bicycle is really good for every muscle.
Yeah.
And it is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I've been reading up, that all this beef we eat is not really good for us. How about that?
Really?
Yeah, I just knew beef had to be good for us, didn't you?
Well, yeah, golly,
we eat a lot of it.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And you know, if we eat it, it's got to be good.
Oh, of course, it's very tasty going down. How could that not be good?
That's what I want to know. It's probably somebody that doesn't own any cattle.
That's probably what it is. It's probably a chicken farmer.
Yeah, or it's a city slicker.
Oh, a city
slicker. Yeah, a city slicker in New York City.
Oh, New York City?
Yeah. They've never even seen a cow. Wow.
They've seen them on TV, and that's about it. Or they go on a hamburger bun.
That's right. They don't know too much about the way real life things work.
That is true. They think vegetables and meat comes from the grocery store.
That's right. And milk comes in a carton. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
We have this little factory that makes milk.
Oh, that's so great.
What do you think would happen to those city slickers if we brought them out to Texas, took them to a real life ranch or a real life farm, and said, this is where all this comes from?
I feel like they would faint.
I think they would faint. You know, they just wouldn't know what to do.
No, they wouldn't know what to do. I think they would be in culture shock. They would probably argue for a little while about how, no, this is not right. It comes from the produce department, or it comes from the butcher department, or whatever the case is. And they would say, this is not even real.
That's right. And they have never been out to the farm and picked a tomato or picked okra. They don't know that okra comes on a stalk.
That's true. And, you know, I think people would get a much better appreciation for the foods that we eat if they knew, like literally, if they knew where they came from. If they saw, you know, where the vegetables are grown or how, you know, things are end up between how they're naturally produced and how they end up in the grocery store. I think people would get a much better appreciation.
Well, and they have never been, they've never raised a garden, so they don't know about, you know, which vegetables grow under the ground or on top of the ground. They've never even seen a vegetable. You know, if they had to dig up a potato, they wouldn't know what to think.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd say, you mean that potato came out of the ground?
Yeah. The city folks are too busy trying to classify a tomato as either a vegetable or a fruit. They don't know which way to go.
They don't know. It's what a shame. I'd hate to go and have to be in New York where all those people, you know, they don't know about anything. They just go to the store and whatever they tell them, that's what they do.
Yeah, or they go to the fancy coffee shop and that's whatever's there is there.
That's right. And Starbucks is $9 for a cup of coffee.
$9 for a cup of coffee? No way. Really?
Yes, it is. Somebody told me that this week, and they put all kinds of stuff in it.
Wow.
They put whipped cream in it. They put cinnamon in it. They put just about anything you want, and it's $9.
Sounds delicious, though.
It would be delicious, but it's a little pricey. I mean, you know, maybe not too much, but it sounds a little bit pricey.
So people might be spending a little bit too much coffee on coffee if they're going to the fancy coffee shops too many times a day, and that'll take out of their retirement. Is that what you're trying to say, Faye? Am I reading between the lines?
I'm trying to say that in a nice way. I'm saying people tell me McDonald's coffee is very good.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's not $9.
No, it's like a dollar and something, like $1.15 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty scrumptious.
Uh-huh. Well, there you go. Difference between $1.15 and $9.
Big difference.
Big difference. Right around the corner from each other, too. That's what's interesting. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. What is your phone number, Faye?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
You know, we joke about paying $4,000 for a cup of coffee, but really there are some people that do that all day, every day. They'll go to the fancy coffee shops several times every day, and they'll go get that $9 cup of coffee like you were talking about. And if you're getting ready for retirement, it may be time, and correct me wrong, it may be time to maybe scale that back a little bit, maybe you know, take some of that money, because I imagine maybe even just once a day or once every other day or a couple times a week, you take that money, you invest it in a life insurance policy. I'm willing to bet that the payoff will far exceed any cup of coffee. Is that correct?
It will be. And, you know, I read this article several months ago. This lady in another state decided that they would quit eating out all the time because, you know, they were always late getting home, so they would just eat out every night. They quit eating out for a month. And she said she saved so much money that they've continued this. They go out once in a while, but they don't eat out every night, which blows your budget.
I mean,
you know, if you're going to eat out every night, you're not saving anything, let me tell you.
Yeah, that is true. And there are people that say, well, we've got the money, you know, it doesn't matter, it's fine. Well, yes, it's not a matter of, you know, do you have the money? It's not a matter of, you know, well, do we put it here or you know, there? You know, how do we allocate it in the budget? It's about how can you get the most out of your money? And so that's really what this whole thing is about. It's about getting ready for retirement. It's about growing your money so you can retire happy, wealthy, and early. And people don't realize how small changes in your everyday behavior and things that you may be spending money on, you know, that you may not need to. You can take some of that, put it in a wise investment like a life settlement, and you'll be amazed at how much money you'll make in a fairly short amount of time, because to change your lifestyle like this, it doesn't take very long before you start to realize the benefits. And so, yeah, you can go have steak every night. You can have fancy coffee every day, or you can have an extra, you know, several thousand dollars in your bank account. I think it's really that's what it comes down to, you know. Do you want to kind of get a little frugal with your money and maybe make a little bit money on your money? Or do you want to go out and have a good time and blow it and have really nothing left to show for it?
Well, I don't like that idea.
No.
You know, at the end of the trail, as I call it, you know, you want to have enough that you can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to enjoy it a lot more if you've saved a lot, if you've invested a lot. You know, I know people that are just sitting with cash in their account. Now, let me tell you something. How much money are you going to make if it's not invested? Sure, you've got the money in your account, but it's not growing. And I think your money should grow every month. And if you have it invested, it will grow. But if you just let it sit there, it's great to have the cash, but it should be growing. And I like the fact that people are growing their money, and most people do stay fully invested. A few don't.
Yeah.
And I always wonder about that, you know. And, you know, our theory is if you want it in cash, it's fine. If you want it fully invested, that's fine. But we do know what we're talking about.
You know, we say this all the time, that if you're not making money, you're losing money. Because in essence, that's really what's happening. So why would people not, and I think I know the answer, I think it's procrastination, I think it's laziness, but correct me if I'm wrong, but why would people not, if you've got money just sitting in the bank and it's not growing, it's not doing anything, why not? Because it's not like people have to physically do anything. It's not like tending to a garden where you have to, you know, water it. You have to weed it. You have to prune things back. This is virtually no maintenance. So your money can make money, and you don't have to do really very much work at all, right?
That's exactly right. It'll make it for you. You know, you don't have to keep 100% invested, but you should, you know, be 75% invested, where you will make money. Now, and, you know, we're always talking about men, how bad they procrastinate. I think I have the best story of all. A gentleman who lived in Midland for years. He heard me on the radio all these years, never did anything. He moves to Granbury, then he calls me. He said, I've been listening to you for years. I've now moved to Granbury. Now I want to come see you.
Yeah.
He came this week to the Dallas office.
Mm-hmm.
And he had money from his former employer. Again, just sitting there, not doing a darn thing. So we rolled all that over, you know, from his old employer, and he had two or three different investments. We rolled that all over where he could make some money. But can you believe he waited that many years?
Wow, that's a long time.
He waited years, and he'd been listening to us so long. He knows us real well. He knows our investments. He knows the stability of the company. But he just didn't get around to it. But then when he moved to Granbury, he wasn't as busy. It's in a small town. And he called and said, you know, I want you to handle this for me. And I'm going, holy cow, he waited all these years. Now, procrastination, he's got it down, you know. Really, really got it down.
Yeah, I ask this all the time. I'm like, you know, is there when people are sitting there like that and they procrastinate and they put it off for years and years and years sometimes, you know, is there some event that triggers a move like this? And a lot of times, you know, we can't really identify it. And it seems like in this case, there was not maybe one particular event other than the fact that he moved and now he's got all this extra time. He has time to actually let the dust settle. He's not busy, you know, running around day-to-day duties and you know, running to your job and taking care of all that you got to do during that process. But he's got the time to actually think about it. And then once things kind of get a little bit quiet and you start to think a little bit and you say, hey, this all makes perfect sense. Why didn't I do this earlier? And it seems like that's what caused this guy to pick up the phone and call you.
It was. And another thing, he changed jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're rolling over his old 401k from where he did work all these years.
Yep.
You know? And, of course, you know, everybody's making so much more money with their new jobs than they did in the old jobs, and we know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's another thing. If you're making more money and you've got all those old 401ks you're thinking about, they're just sitting there. I don't even work there anymore.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, we need to move that out and get that fully invested.
You know, and I was talking to a couple people earlier this week, and they both said something similar. Not exactly the same thing, but the bottom line, the theme that ran through all of these conversations was that it seems like when we were starting out, when we were growing up, when we were like young people, the concept was very similar. It was always, you know, get a good job, work hard, you know, get a job with a good pension, you retire, and then you've got plenty of money and you'll be fine. It seems like things changed. The environment changed. The whole landscape of you know, working changed. And then all of a sudden things, it got really big. Busy. It got really complicated, and it didn't need to be. And so this is a good chance to maybe stop and say, okay, yes, there's not very many companies that offer a pension anymore, so the responsibility is on us. Let's go ahead. Let's do something responsible. Let's go ahead, start saving that money. If you've got a couple hundred thousand or a million or two in the bank and it's not doing anything, you've got to put that money to work, because I don't know anybody, if you were to walk up to them and said, hey, I'm going to give you a stack of bills right now. Here is $25,000, and you don't have to do anything except say thank you. I don't know anybody that would turn it down. Investing in a life settlement is virtually the same thing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got to get it started. You got to get it going. But as far as what you have to do to actually, quote unquote, earn that money, it's virtually the same, because you're investing, you wait for the life insurance policy to mature, and you get paid. It's that simple.
That's right. And what I like about life settlements, rather than the stock, no anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have anxiety because we know how much we're going to get at the end of the term.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like to think, okay, I know I'm going to get my principal back. That's really important. That is the main reason to do any investment like this. We know we're going to get the principal back. We know we're going to get our interest. And when we're in other investments, we don't know that. We don't know if we'll ever get our principal or the interest. And we don't know what we're going to make. With this, you know exactly what you're going to make. And you know almost, you know, when you're going to get it back. So, you know, I think that's really important to know that you will get your principal, you will get your interest, and that's better than speculation.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're speculating, how much you're going to make, you don't know if you'll get all of it back, part of it, or if you'll make a lot of money. You don't know.
Anybody who's guessing whether or not they're going to be ready for retirement, they're not ready for retirement.
No. And the other thing about other investments that I don't like is you may get ready to retire and it may be down.
Mm-hmm.
If we have another recession, and we don't know when that'll happen, but we know about 2008, and it hit everybody real hard because the brokers weren't telling them to get out of the stock market.
Yeah.
And the really smart people get out every time they think there's going to be a big bump.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to lose a dime, and they don't. Most of them don't.
Right.
And, of course, the ones that are on Bitcoin and all these fancy deals, every once in a while they lose like $140 million.
Oh, yeah. Like nobody's business. Just right there. Boom.
Yeah, when you speculate and really get out here into the risk field, you know, anything can happen.
Right, right. You know, there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy. And then along the same lines, there's a difference between smart and being wise. And really, I think the both of those comparisons are almost they operate in correlation with each other, because a rich person may be smart, a wealthy person is wise, and they take their money and they recognize every single opportunity to make more money on top of the money they've already got. Nobody's ever going to say, "I've got enough money, I think I'm fine." Nobody's ever said that in the history of the universe, as far as I can tell. I've Googled it. I can't find where anybody's ever said that. So a wise person will take advantage of every single opportunity. An even wiser person will take advantage of safer, more conservative ways of making more money. Like you say, less anxiety, less wondering if all of a sudden one day everything's going to be gone. And that's the beauty of these life settlements, is that this type of a program really hits on all the high points. It hits all those things. It's safe. It's more conservative. You don't have to worry about things. You can go ahead and live your life. It takes low maintenance. I mean, it hits all. If you were to sit down and make a list of the ideal investment opportunity, this would hit it. Because really, the way this works is somebody's, and this is what makes you so unique, people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, they oftentimes realize that the treatment is very, very expensive. And so the fastest way for them to get a lump sum of money to go ahead and start the treatment and do the things they need to do is to sell their life insurance policy. You are only bidding on stage 4 policies. There's a number of other companies, and this is what people need to be careful of. There's a number of other companies that will buy any policy for any reason at any time. And that's not at all what you're doing. This is what makes your approach even better than any other type of general life settlement, is because you're only doing stage 4 cancer, because we know that there's an end to it. And so when you're bidding on these policies, you're looking at these things. Which ones do we buy? These are the types you're looking at. And Faye, you've seen these numbers for years. They consistently work.
Well, and that's right. And we're trying to take all the guesswork out. You can never take it all out. But we're trying to be as conservative as possible. In other words, not every policy meets the criteria. And there's been some I've wanted lately, but they just didn't measure up. I just didn't think they were sick enough. It didn't seem to me like it was progressing. And the ones we buy are progressing rather rapidly. You know, we did some small policies this week that were 12 and 18 months.
Wow.
So those people are not going to live long. No. Usually if they say 18, it's going to come in sooner. The 12-month one, I'll bet you anything, comes in 6 to 7 months.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, they're really sick. They're very short-term. We were lucky to get them. Even though they're small, you know, people jumped right on them and filled them up in like a day. We had all those owned to the bank in a day. So, you know, we've done a lot of policies that are really great in the last 2 weeks. We've got a bunch more to go that we have won that we don't have finished. But again, these are ones the doctors say, okay, they cannot, they're not going to make a comeback. You know, it is definitely stage 4. It has metastasized in other places, and that is the key. If it's already moved into your other organs, there's just no way you're going to get out of it, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why we buy them, because we know they're short. Sometimes they're going to show 30 months, and usually they're not even 30.
Yeah.
So if they say it's 2.5 years, sometimes it's not.
And that's a trend that you've noticed recently, is that a lot of the these experts, they're making the life expectancy a little bit longer. They're getting a little bit more conservative with how long they say these policies may take to mature. And so that's a really great thing for the investor, because that wedge between the expectant date and when it actually does oftentimes gets wider, which means it comes in. Let me try to translate this. If a 24-month policy, maybe a year ago, the same person now might be given, say, 28 or 30 months, which means, okay, now you're going to get a larger percentage of profit because you try to go 1% each month. If that policy comes in at the same time as it would have when it was predicted to go 24, now it means people are getting a higher percentage but faster, right? I mean, it seems like it's working out really, really well in the investor's favor.
Well, I hope so. And you know, we haven't seen it work yet, but I think it will, because it's worked in the past. Like, you know, it seemed to me like the 30-month ones came in early. Some of the shorter ones were late. And, it you know, it all blends in the long run. Sometimes a short one, you know, may go over 3 months, 4 months. And then we've had some in the last few months that came in at 2 months and 3 months when I thought they were going to go longer than that. You know, I had no idea that the cancer was that going to be that quick, that it was that bad. And as you know, I've been seeing so many younger people. You know, that one that just passed away was a young mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and had just had a child. And my gosh, and got cancer at that young age. And some of the people we know right now, their daughter is in college, and they think she has stomach cancer.
I mean,
we don't know what is causing all this. I have no idea. But it seems to me like we've got a lot more of it than we used to have. I don't have the facts on it. I know the government every once in a while puts out the facts on how many deaths there is each year because of cancer. You know, what percentage? And it shows it's increased instead of decreasing. Even though we've got all these new drugs, we've got all these new treatments, but the ones that we do, most of them, they don't catch it before it's already spread.
Yeah, and that's what makes even what you're doing even more specifically targeted towards a great type of investment for people who want to get something a little bit more conservative, who want to, you know, have a little bit more, I guess, and insurance is probably not the right word, but, you know, they might want to feel better that, hey, this is going to work out. Excuse me. I don't have to worry about, you know, losing the principal. I don't have to worry about, you know, investing for 10 years and then all of a sudden one day everything's gone and I've got to start over. That's what makes this so good. And the fact that you are bidding on stage four cancers makes it even a better targeted investment opportunity. And so what happens is these people need to sell their policy. So you go up against other companies, you bid against them. If you're awarded with it, now you've got the policy. And now this is when it turns into an investment for people, because the policy holder, they sold their policy, you bought it, they have their lump sum of money, they can go on and do the treatment they need to do. They don't need to think about their policy anymore. They're moved on. They've got what they needed because we know that
they needed the cash. You're exactly right.
It's very expensive.
They move on. They take the cash. They start the treatment they need, and they're trying to survive is what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
They're trying to prolong the life that they've given.
Right.
And it doesn't always work, but at least they're trying.
Yeah,
and you know, the family has agreed to it, and so now we own that with our clients.
Mm-hmm. And so, how do you take that policy? Say you've got, and I'm just throwing out a random number here. Say you've got $1 million policy. You've got it. The policyholder has their cash. Now you've got the policy. How does that turn into an investment for people to make some money?
Okay, so the first thing we're going to do, we've already figured when we bid it how much, you know, the 1% per month. We figured a percentage for us. We figured how much we have to escrow for premiums. And then we put it out to our clients and say, we'd like to have you in this policy. We'd like for you to put $100,000 or $50,000 or $70,000, whatever it is, in this policy.
Mm-hmm.
So then we offer it out to all these people. And most people, you know, get in the policies immediately. Sometimes it takes a couple of days to find everybody. You know, all of our people are in the oil business, so we can't always just find them. A lot of our people are retired, but most of them are still working, and most of them have an IRA with us. So once we locate them, they say yes, then we put them in that policy. We send all that to the bank along with a spreadsheet, and then they wire that money to that owner.
So it's a very simple, streamlined, quick process.
And then our checklist, before we close, we have a 2-page checklist. And we have to go over all the checklists, make sure that the owner and the other people have given us everything we're requiring. And it's a long checklist of everything. We have to have letters from the owner, the owner's wife, the children, everybody, saying they agree to this. We have to make sure the wife is signed off on it, that she doesn't get any of this money. And the insurance company, we have to verify with them the premiums are paid. So there's just a lot to do before we can close that policy.
And the thing that people should know is that since this list is so long, there's a lot of detail that you pay attention to. There's a lot of, you know, I guess, protective safety measures that are involved with the life settlement. And so people should really have a lot of comfort in knowing that, yeah, you're paying a lot of attention to a lot of really specific details to make sure that this does pay off. And it's a wonderful opportunity. The point is that you do all these things. The investor doesn't have to worry about it. They get in the policy and they like, okay, Faye, I want in. You know, you take the money, you put it in the policy. The investor goes about their life. They don't have to get up at midnight and check anything. They don't have to maintain anything. There's not a huge questionnaire they have to answer every, you know, 90 days or whatever it is. There's nothing that they have to do except wait for you to let them know, hey, the policy's mature. This money's going in your bank.
That's exactly right. And every time, you know, we let them know. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. We take care of the details. We take care of ensuring that they've got a good policy. We take care of all the details, the legal. We do all of that. So, you know, they don't have to be responsible for the legal, for the contracts, you know. So when they walk into it, they're ready to go with very little except their signature and their yes.
Yeah, very little effort on the investor's part. So
that's right.
We've talked about why people need to invest. We've talked about a great opportunity for people to make some money by investing. There are some risks, though, and in a few minutes, we're going to get into those. There's three major risks that we always talk about. People have to know them, even if they are a little bit smaller. They're almost non-existent, but they are there, and people need to know about it before they get involved with this. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But in the meantime, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330, and we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting things to the table. It's some Texas history, a place to go, a thing to put on our bucket list. So, what's our topic this morning?
It's a bucket list thing.
Yay!
It's a place that everybody needs to go. And I know you've not been from Texas. You haven't been there yet. And if you have, I'll be shocked.
Okay.
The Johnson Space Center, down by Houston, Texas.
I was there probably 25 years ago, but not since.
Wow, you went when it was new.
Yes.
Almost.
Very
well,
long
as
time
you
ago.
Know, they built it, as you know, in 1961.
Uh-huh.
Gemini, Apollo, Skylab, this has been the lead for NASA, as you know. It was the early space program. Do you know who said we need to put a man to the moon in the next century? Do you know who it was?
I want to say it was Kennedy, but I'm not sure. I don't.
It was John F. Kennedy.
Wow!
Said we need to put a man on the moon by end of the decade.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Now, when they started out, it was not called the Johnson Space Center.
Mm-hmm.
It did not become the Johnson Space Center till 1973. After Johnson was long gone, and they decided to name it after him after he had passed away. And 1 million people a year visit the Space Center.
Really?
Yes. Now, when they started to build this, the reason they built it down by Houston, they said, first of all, we have to have lots of water. We have to be near an Army Air Force deal for flights out of there. We have to have warm weather. That's why they picked Houston, Texas, back in the 60s.
Hmm.
And then the other thing, they wanted to be next to the universities like Rice. That's where most of the astronauts studied. There was 11 astronauts came from Rice University. Then A&M is closed, and they wanted all this availability of people, you know, graduating from those two schools. And then the other thing was contractors have to be near them if they have a problem in flight and have to call on the outside contractors to help them. And, you know, that's happened a few times. And then some of the greatest things about this, if it was 25 years ago, I know you haven't seen everything. You've missed a lot. But they have over 160,000 acres. It's got a billion. They spent over $1 billion building this.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That is
a billion
huge.
For building this facility
My
there.
My goodness.
Yes. Now then, the neat thing, and I remember when this happened because it was all on television, you know, they decided to have a space shuttle atop an aircraft there in the Johnson Space Center. And the landmark attraction is the world's only shuttle replica mounted on an original shuttle aircraft carrier.
Really?
How about this? Yes. So you can see this it was at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and they flew it up here, put it there, and it's on display, and it is a NASA 905. They moved that on August 14th, 2014. It took this huge lift, and it was called the Rise of Independence. And it was placed on top of the aircraft, and it sits there today, and you can see the whole thing.
Wow.
Yes. It's a giant exhibit, and so they opened it in 16, and it cost them $15 million to move it and to put it on top of that aircraft.
$15 million.
Only in Texas would they do that, by the way. Everything has to be bigger, has to be better. This thing is open every day except Christmas.
Really?
Can you believe that?
Huh.
Christmas is the only time it's not. Now, here's the other things you can see there, and you may have. The Mercury 9 capsule's there, the Gemini 5 capsule, the Apollo 17 command module, the Lunar Module Test Vehicle, the Lunar Roving Vehicle Trainer's there, and the Lunar Touchstone, only 8 in the world, and it can be touched, and the Skylab Trainer, and the docking module trainer from Apollo.
Really?
And then they've got the moon rocks there.
Yes.
They've got so much there. It's just, it's an amazing thing.
My goodness. Yeah, I think it was probably in 77, 78 when I was there. So it's been a long time. I'm sure it has changed. I do remember some capsules and some modules. But I'm sure that there's so much. It's probably completely. It's probably not even the same as when I saw it last. I've definitely got to go down there.
But the three flown spacecraft is there, and NASA. This is still the most famous place anywhere. There's nothing, you know, any more famous than the NASA Center, and everything is just so fantastic there. And it is a huge, huge facility. They have the museum there. They've got all these other things that people can see. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And Independence Plaza, no one wants to miss that. And Apollo 11, you know, the command module, all these things are just magnificent. Nowhere in the world except Texas would you find all of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. And, you know, you look at some of these things and you think to yourself, how in the world did that piece of equipment make it to the moon? It looks so archaic compared to some of the gadgets and the fancy things that they use now. You know, you see those things and it's like, my goodness, it looks like it was put together with, you know, duct tape and chewing gum.
So, well, and you know that... everything that's happening now in the space program, they're still in charge of it there.
Yeah.
You know, the mission control is still the space program, and the people from other countries come here to do all their training. It's done right there out there by Houston.
Yeah.
NASA has to, the jets they use, and I didn't know all this, but they have three kinds of jets that they use for training. That mock the space vehicles. And so they've had those there all this time, and they still use all that. But I cannot believe it cost $1.5 billion.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just incredible.
But it's a home of mission control. It's still NASA's lead for International Space Station. All this is still right there, and it's still NASA's commercial crew programs. It's the largest research and development, and they've contributed to medicine, technology, engineering, and to our science program.
Yeah.
And because of all the things they've done right there.
You know, one of the great things about it is the integrity that's involved with the facility. You know, it's one thing to build a museum and put artifacts in there and put things in there, but it's literally still an active facility that is still fully functioning. And so it's not like it's just a museum. There's literally things that are happening. So it's always such a fluid situation, you know, down in Houston with all these things that are going on. You're not just touring, you know, a museum. There's literally things that they're still doing every single day. People are going to work and researching things, studying things, you know, planning things, building things, doing, you know, mapping out technology to continue the space program. I mean, it's an active facility, and that's pretty exciting.
I think it is. And the Apollo Command Service Module that was intended for Apollo 19, it is displayed. The restored Saturn V is on loan from the Smithsonian.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
So there's just lots of things that you're not going to see anywhere in the world except right there.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to me that they have all this and have restored these rockets and all these different things about our space program. And it's still the command center for everything we do in space.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we train people from other countries.
I know.
Naturally.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah. Not only is the United States doing this, but this is in Texas, where we're training people from all over the world. So, of course, it's just fitting.
That's right. And I love it because they brought that spaceship up here from Kennedy and installed it where you can see what it looks like when it's mounted on an aircraft to go into space.
Oh, no, it's huge. You know, you see these things and you see them on TV and you think, okay, well, that's great, and it looks really small on TV. You get to see that thing in person and all these things, they're bigger than life. And you think to yourself, imagine all the miles that these things have traveled, and you know the consoles, the rocks that have come from the moon. It's like all these things are. It's almost like the kind of thing that you can't really wrap your brain around because it's not in our little bubble here. It's so far beyond what we are exposed to on a day to day basis. It reminds us of how small we actually are as people.
That's exactly right. And what reminds me of. Is that man years and years ago after our first space shuttle, and he said, it didn't happen. I was sitting here in my living room. It's just on television. If he could have went to Houston, Texas, and saw all this, the man would have never been the same. Have never been the same. But his world was too small. He had a little television, and he couldn't get his head around that things were really happening. And that we're really sending people to the moon. He couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fascinating thing to see it, you know, from TV, and then you see it in real life. You realize that, man, there's so much that people have done that we're not even aware of. You know, a lot of times, you know, I remember when the space shuttle was first going off, and even some rockets, they would show them on TV. And if you were in school, they'd gather everybody around, they'd wheel the TV in on the cart, and everybody would be in the room, and you'd watch it live on TV. They don't do that anymore, and so now it's barely a footnote on the news that a rocket went off and, you know, somebody went, you know, into space or whatever. We barely even give it any coverage anymore. But the work that they have done, the research that they have done, the technology that they had to create in order to do that is fascinating. And I stopped to think to myself, you know, when you see these things, it's like, man, there were people in these little tiny capsules. It had to have been so claustrophobic to be up there and then have a guy, you know, down in Houston telling you, you know, thousands of miles away what's going on and what your status is and what you need to do and turn the rocket this way and angle it that way. And it's just so fascinating, all the parts that have to come together to make all this work.
And what amazes me is the men that worked on this, the technology, they were so brilliant to build these. And these NASA engineers had to be the most brilliant people we've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine sending a man to the moon. And now we've got the International Space Station.
I know.
And people are sitting up there. Gosh. I mean, what a deal. And that's why, you know, it's so amazing for kids, you know, to really study, to really get the most knowledge that they can to really be somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? To be something extraordinary.
And speaking of the space station, it always fascinates me that the space station and satellites that are up in the sky, it amazes me how they put these things out there and they don't just like float away or drift off, and they stay in where they are. I don't know how they don't float away.
But you know, that one finally came back to Earth. You know, finally crashed after years and years up there.
Yeah,
and we don't even know what held it up there, but it was there for years, and finally it came back. For some reason, it came back to Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were so worried about it hitting something. You know,
I remember that.
Oh my gosh! And when you think about it, each time they landed in the ocean, I watched it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always thought, my gosh, what if they can't get out of the capsule?
Yes. What if the capsule
sinks?
And it
was rocky. Remember how rocky it was in the water, and they were seasick time they got out.
Yes, That thing is just sitting, and there's no motor, there's no engine, they have no control of everything. That capsule is just bobbing along in the ocean, and you're right, it was rough seas, and that thing would almost toss that capsule around all over the place. I'm like, my goodness.
Woo. Yeah, and I always thought, they need to get there real quick to pick them up.
Yeah.
And they were usually just a few miles away, not far, and then, of course, they had to leave them in the capsule and put them where they could, come out of it real easy, where they wouldn't be sick. And then they'd come out on deck and we'd see them, or we'd see them later, a couple of days later.
Yeah.
But usually they would get out on deck and you'd see them briefly.
Yeah, and when you get that thumbs up from the astronaut, it's like, yeah, there we go. This is a big victory right there.
That's right. And then there was some, if you remember, they told them before they landed, we've got a problem with it.
Yeah.
You've got to go around the Earth a few more times.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, here they were back in the atmosphere, and they could not land right then. And I remember all that. And they said, well, we've got something, the door is jammed or something's jammed, and they'll just have to go around a few more times.
Wow. There's so much involved with this. It's so hard to relate to it. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, it's definitely worth taking a road trip to Houston and taking a tour of the Johnson Space Center.
Yeah, because if it was 25 years ago, you've missed a lot.
Oh yeah.
They have done so much since then, and I think it's worth another road trip for everybody in Texas to go if they haven't. I bet there's a lot of people have never been to the Johnson Space Center.
I bet you're right.
They should have already been.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not something that comes to mind very often. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a great idea. Maybe a road trip this spring or even, during like summer break.
Yes, I think it is. Summer's a good time to go there and spend the day and just really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And there's so much to see that I didn't even name. I just glossed over it.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got so much there; it would take all day to see it all.
It really would. And really, if you wanted to spend any amount of time with it, you could probably very well spend 2 days there. I would imagine.
Oh, I think you could too. Yes, and people with children or grandchildren—they may have their grandchildren this summer. It'd be a wonderful trip for them.
Yeah, Johnson Space Center going back on the list of things to do. Awesome. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're right next to Ivy Cottage at 3105 Big Spring.
Now, we talked about why people need to invest. We've talked about why they need to invest in a life settlement, all the advantages of this approach as opposed to other options like the stock market. But then one thing we need to cover is the three risks that are involved with a life settlement type of investment.
That's right. There's three risks. The first one is the greatest risk. It could go over, We don't know that it will, but it could. And so we have to tell you it might go over. It might go over a year, might be 2 years. But usually it's not that long. I've had several that have went a year over. I've had them go 6 months over. And usually it doesn't cost you a lot. You're still going to get 100% of what you've got coming. You're going to get your principal. You're going to get your interest. But it is delayed, and you have to know it could be delayed. So, a lot of policies come in early. Some of them come in on time. And then a percentage is going to come in late also. So you have to know that and be prepared for that when you buy your policy. Then the second risk is it's not liquid during that time. If you're on the cutting edge and you're going to need that cash, don't do it. So our clients are all, most of them, 90%. Are accredited, so they don't worry about that. It's IRA money. They're not going to need it during that time, but it's not liquid until it matures each time. And then it is liquid, and you can make changes, do what you need to do. And that's another thing about the way we do business. If a person should need some cash, we can get a check overnighted to you. And I know you can't with brokerage houses and things like that. It takes several days. First, they have to sell your stocks, your bonds, whatever it is, in order to get you in cash. And if you've got cash in your account, we can overnight it to you.
Very
cool. So that's another advantage. Then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went broke. We've never had one in Texas go broke. And they're worth so much money. If one of them ever was having a problem, somebody would buy it before the sun went down.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their premium income, which is so great.
Yeah, there's just too much money to be made. You're right. It's almost like you have the risk there, but it's almost like there's this gigantic safety net right underneath it. So it's not something anybody needs to lose sleep over. It's never happened. If it did, somebody would come in. Probably a couple people would come in and swoop it up, you know, before lunch. So
oh yeah, everybody would be trying to get to it. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Because life insurance is really they're our greatest asset we've got in this country because they're worth more than the banks. Most of them are. You know, one of the life insurance companies that we do annuities with, it's worth $58 billion.
Wow, that's insane.
And it's A-rated by all three agencies.
Wow.
Not just one, but all three. It's A+. And I've been in business 100 years.
Mm.
And most of these insurance companies, if you check them, they've been in business forever.
Yeah. I mean, you can't beat that kind of stability.
No, and that premium income is what makes them so wealthy. Their income is so much. I wonder some days how they handle all the cash. There's such a huge amount of cash coming in every day of their life.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly, they've got systems in place and processes in order, so it seems to be working for a lot of people. Now, to do this, and you kind of touched on this a little bit when you were talking about how these are not liquid, and so you can't access the cash. For most people, they're not going to have to worry about it because they do have to be accredited, and that means there are a certain set of requirements that you need to fulfill in order to be able to do this. So what does it take to be accredited?
First of all, you have to make $200,000 a year, or there's two ways you can do it. If you're if you're making $200,000 a year, you can get in, and that includes your bonuses, everything that you get at the end of the year. The other thing is if you're worth $1 million without your home. In Texas, you cannot count your house. Hmm. I don't know if you can in other states, but I know in Texas you cannot. So you have to be worth $1 million. You have to say, okay, I've got rent houses. I've got a ranch, I've got a farm, I've got a 401k, I've got an IRA, I've got my savings. You add all that up and see if you're worth $1 million or go with the $200,000 a year.
Do you find many people come in and they're not really sure, come to find out they are accredited and didn't know it? Maybe they forgot about a 401k or something someplace or a property?
Yes, about a month ago I had a couple come in and they weren't sure they were worth $1 million, so they went home. And a month later, they called me back. They said, we're worth $1.4 million. So they were worth a lot more than they thought. They came back, and we put some money in life settlements for them.
Yeah. So quite often, if people are kind of running some numbers right now in their head, they're just kind of some light figures as far as they may be out busy right now. They're not actually sitting down with a piece of paper. But, there may be opportunities there that the people have long forgot about. Maybe a property someplace or maybe a 401k from a job, from several years ago that they have forgotten about. It's worth going back, looking at, what type of assets do you have? Where do you sit? And is this something that that you can move forward with? Now, if for some reason somebody's not accredited, it does not mean abandon all plans for retirement. It does not mean just plan on working until you fall over. There are other options to get ready for retirement.
That's right. You can do an annuity. Annuities have been around 150 years. Annuities are issued by a life insurance company. And the life insurance companies will guarantee your principal from the day you put it in to the day you take it out. And what I like, if you have an emergency at the end of the third year and had to take it all out, you can get it all out. Now, you can't with some companies, but the companies I represent, you can. And I like that. Also, you do not have to take a payout with the companies I use. If at the end of 7 years or 10 years, whatever your annuity calls for, you can actually walk away and say, okay, I'll take my principal, my interest, and I'm taking it out. Or you can say, I want to take a payout starting the second year. I want to take 10% every year for the rest of my life. You can do that. There's so many options with an annuity. I love them. I think they're great. I'm always seeing this guy on television saying, don't buy an annuity. Well, it's because he does mutual funds. He doesn't want anybody to have an annuity. But our annuities are called a fixed index annuity. They're not the type of annuities that have got mutual funds in them, so they can't go down. If you buy a variable annuity, they can go down, They're issued only by brokerage houses. You have to have a Series 6 license to do those because they are different.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not like what we do. We do fixed rate annuities is what they're called. And that way they cannot go down.
You know, as I hear all these different options and I hear the safety measures that are in place and I hear the advantages, I weigh those against, you know, the risks that you were talking about. It seems like you have literally removed as many of the risky variables as possible to make these sound investments that people can count on, a way that people can actually grow their retirement for real instead of just, you know, somebody promising something here and it may or may not work out. No, I mean, all the facts back this. I mean, it seems like something that once somebody gets into, especially a life settlement, once they get in, they probably are not going to want to get out. I imagine not too many people leave the program, right?
No, they sure don't. It's very, very seldom does someone say, oh, I'll try the stock market. Not unless they're out of their mind.
Yeah, I can't imagine that really ever happening. And the great thing about this is it's part of a strategy. This is not a kind of a thing where you get into one policy and then you're done and you go ahead and retire. The way that this works is this happens over, you know, if we kind of back out a little bit, look at the big picture, because we've been hyper-focused on how the process works. But the way this works, in the big picture, people get in multiple policies. They get in multiple policies over a number of years. And so it's part of a strategy that people can get involved with that happens, you know, they're diversified with their portfolio, you know. So while one policy may be maturing, they're taking their profits, putting it into another policy. And this is really how the whole process works. So just on a rough basis, I know everybody's situation is a little bit different, but on a rough, generic, generalized basis, how long would you say people should be in a life settlement type of investment in order to get to where they need to retire?
Well, I think they should start in like at 40, 45 years old and go all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
That way they have got a lot of money by the time they retire. Now, let's say they don't, but they've got $250,000, $300,000 to work with. We can start with that and build it up over the next 12, 15 years and have them enough to retire.
Yeah.
And remember, they need to consider, how much am I going to need to retire? And they need to put the pencil to it. It's never too late or too early either to say, okay, how much are we going to need to retire? This is what we need to know. So that's what you have to do. You have to say, okay, here's where we're at, here's where we want to be, and here's what we want to do when we retire. As I said, when these men get bored after they retire, they go buy a ranch.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just go buy a ranch and start riding.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some people don't have the energy for that, but a lot of men do. And they love it. And I think it's to get out of the house. I really do. I think they don't want to be in the house all the time with their wife. It's too much. You know, it's too much of that.
Well,
so that's what they do.
You know, people work for all these years, and then all of a sudden they find themselves with all this spare time, and they kind of go a little stir crazy too. So, you know, sometimes you just have to get busy again. You're used to staying so busy and having a certain amount of responsibility. Sometimes you just have to do stuff like that. So
that's right, and you need to stay busy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. People who are busy, their minds are good. Their mind will last them the rest of their life. But if you go and you sit down and you're not doing anything, your mind's just going to turn to mush.
Yeah.
So you've got to have something to be doing, okay?
All right.
I mean, you can't just sit around, let me tell you.
No, you'll go crazy. So the bottom line is, don't procrastinate. You know, get the money, making some money. Get ready. It doesn't take very much effort at all. The bottom line, you got to get started. And so, Faye, for someone who wants to come see you, what should they do today before they come talk to you?
Well, first of all, they need to look and see what they've got. They need to say, okay, we've got this, this, and this. Is this what we want to do? And get all that together, figure out how much they're worth or how much income they have, and then call me. Make an appointment. Let me talk to you. See if you like us. If you like us, you know, we want to do it. So that's what they've got to do. They've got to say, okay, we want to change what we're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if they change what they're doing, you know, they're going to be a lot happier, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anybody that's making money that they're not making today is always much happier once that happens. So, Faye, one last time, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. What is your phone number so people can call you and make an appointment to come see you?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring. You can't miss us.